This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll take a look at the Regional Women's Summit that happens later this month. First up, good news on the education front. U.S. high school graduation rates have been steadily improving in recent years. They reached an all-time high in the 2013-2014 school year, according to the Department of Education. Different states are using a variety of methods, programs, and initiatives to increase graduation rates with varying degrees of success. And joining us to discuss improving student retention and high school graduation rates are Northern Kentucky Education Council Executive Director Polly Lusk-Page, Learn to Earn Dayton Executive Director and University of Dayton Professor Dr. Thomas Lasley, and founder and CEO of Civic Enterprises and Vice Chair of the Service Year Alliance at the Aspen Institute, John Bridgeland. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Polly, John, and Tom, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Nice to be with you.
Nice to be here.
John, graduation rates have been steadily rising. How big of an increase are we talking? How much have they've been rising by?
So it's actually quite a hope spot for the country. Over the last decade, high school graduation rates have increased more than 10 percentage points, which means that 2 million more students across the United States have actually graduated from high school rather than dropping out, with significant consequences to them as individuals, to our society and our economy.
So when did the uptrend start?
About 2001, we had 30 years of flatlining high school graduation rates. And interestingly, four U.S. presidents set the same goal of a 90% high school graduation rate by date certain. And it would come year after year and go.
And we still weren't there.
We wouldn't make it. But finally, the country got organized and looked at what does the evidence tell us that it can actually increase high school graduation rates, and could we get particularized data with respect to every student to see where are they falling off track, what do they need in the way of supports, and how we can help them stay on track to graduate.
In the 2010-2011 school year, a lot of schools started using the adjusted cohort graduation rate.
Yes.
What exactly is that? How did that affect the way that graduation rates are calculated?
So in 2005, the governors got organized, and all 50 governors in the United States agreed to a common calculation of graduation rates. So from Ohio to California to Florida to Albuquerque to Akron, we'd have a common calculation of how students were actually doing. That was adopted by the U.S. Department of Education, as you just mentioned, in the 2010-2011 school year, became the common measure across the United States. Mark, the good news, though, is that the average freshman graduation rate, which was the calculation prior to this four-year common calculation graduation rate, is actually very, very similar in terms of the data trends, and also show the flatlining for 30 years.
And then the uptrend.
And then from about 2001 to 2014, this uptrend to, 82, 83 percentage points.
Paulia and Tom, your perspective is why are we doing better?
Well, I think for us in Northern Kentucky, in our state, statewide, what's given us a real uptick is the increase in the compulsory attendance age now for our entire state. And with that increase in age also came the idea that you needed to think about interventions and what you were going to implement as far as programs. And that's really helped us look at prevention and retention. And what does that mean for all of our youth?
Mm-hmm. Tom, your perspective.
I share that. The real secret here is in trying to provide interventions for young people. If you notice, John said 2001 was a critical date. Anyone who's familiar with public policy will tell you that a magical thing happened that year. It was a magical thing that some people loved and some people hated, but it was called the No Child Left Behind legislation. And a lot of people felt like that was a wrong-headed move. But it's curious that at a point when the United States and many states within our country decided to set higher expectations for young people and set more rigorous assessments in place, that suddenly our graduation rates went up rather than down. And I think it's because we've undersold our young people far too often. Mm-hmm. And what we need are the interventions in place and the kinds of supports that young people need that are going to allow them to be successful. And I think that's what Polly's talking about. And I think that's where John would be with a lot of his efforts as well.
Yeah, I have to add that we did a nationally representative survey of high school dropouts all across the United States. And to Polly's point, We literally listened to these 15 and 16-year-old kids tell us, well, at 16, I went out and I signed out of school because I could. And so raising the age to 18 was an expectation from the states down to parents that we actually believe you, in this economy, you should graduate from high school as a minimum.
Right.
And to Tom's excellent point, in No Child Left Behind, and it is controversial, but it required states and districts and schools to set graduation rate goals and actually be accountable for progress. And that had a way of translating into caring about every single child and how they were doing on their pathway to graduation.
I think, to your point, thinking about listening to those students, we had a summit in 2010 where we really wanted to learn from the youth, why did you drop out, or why are you dropping out, or what are the reasons? And many of them were factors clearly outside of school. But then what could we do as a community to provide those wraparound services from business, education, and community leaders across the entire region and our state, too, to think about how we could help move them all forward?
One other thing, I think it's imperative that we understand that as we've begun to share with young people, the goal of high school graduation is an expectation. It's also been significant that our communities that are beginning to experience success are saying high school graduation is the first step to your success. You have to take that step. But the real key is the ability of that young person to secure some sort of marketable credential after high school. Could be a college degree, could be an HVAC certificate, lots of different things. But we're saying to our young people, it's imperative if you want a living wage job that you really skill yourself for the economy that you're going to confront.
I think that's what you mentioned too, John. In today's economy,
it's so interesting. Tom's right. A generation ago, the vast majority of jobs just required a high school diploma. But today and well into the future, 75-80% of the jobs will require not only a high school degree, a diploma, but some post-secondary education. It could be a one-year occupational certificate, a two-year community college degree, a four-year degree, or beyond. But something beyond high school is going to be required for these more globally competitive, demanding jobs of this economy.
So I have a question for John, if that's okay.
Go right ahead.
So, well, on the national level, are there very many states that are measuring college and career readiness? Because we are in Kentucky.
Yes.
And I feel like we're a little bit ahead of the curve, but I'm not really sure. So
Kentucky's such an interesting story since the passage of the Kentucky Education Reform Act and the Pritchard Committee, the citizens kind of and business-led movement to skill up the young people for the jobs of Kentucky's future. Kentucky's been leading the way, adoption of Common Core and looking at what is a culture of college and career readiness, how can we adjust the pipeline. Here in Cincinnati, the Strive Partnership is extraordinary in looking at the entire pipeline from pre-K to employment. States are starting to catch up, and the Lumina Foundation and some other organizations are prompting them with this national report every year showing the relationship between high school graduation and college and career readiness. And in fact, in the fall, we're producing a major report showing that relationship state by state.
Good.
So I'm sure Kentucky and Ohio will be in pretty good shape, but some of the others have work to do.
John, you mentioned Common Core, which like No Child Left Behind, has had its controversial aspects surrounding it. But how much of an impact do you think that's had in improving the graduation rate?
So it's interesting. The most dramatic improvement in high school graduation rates occurred during the very time when schools and districts and states were actually raising their standards and what was required to graduate from high school. So we're clearly not producing diploma mills. This isn't just cranking out more degrees, more diplomas for students who are not prepared for their futures. The good news, too, is there were about 2,000 high school dropout factories, they were called, because their graduation rates were so low. We've cut that in half, and a million fewer students are attending these high school dropout factories today. But just to show you the importance of Common Core, just today, the Office of Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Education released a groundbreaking report showing the disparities between access that Black students and Latino students and their white and higher-income peers have to courses like physics and calculus and even Algebra 2, which is a college pathway course. A bunch of the schools across in the United States don't offer those courses, which means you're shutting down early in the pipeline equal access to post-secondary education, which flies completely in face of the American dream.
Notice that once the states began to set standards and establish standards and particularly looked at trying to make those standards even more rigorous than they were in the past, our students responded. We need to really have those kinds of expectations. I find in working with inner city schools, the young people don't want you to sell them short. They want you to really have expectations for what they can accomplish and then provide supports and interventions that are going to allow them to be successful. So a lot of people don't like Common Core in Ohio. We've decided to call it Ohio's Learning Standards.
There are Kentucky academic standards as well.
Everybody's figured out a way to get around it, but I tell people it really is about setting very, very strong expectations for our young people because that's what our country is going to need, and they can do it.
And it really levels the playing field. I think that's – if we think about that those standards are foundational, what we would want every child at the bare minimum to know and be able to do, it makes perfect sense. I don't think you can argue with the standards are,
really. Survey of dropouts, it was actually kind of an emotional experience for me. I was behind the glass watching these young people be interviewed, and this one young girl who was 16, she took over the whole focus group. She was charismatic, articulate. And we said, what did you want to be when you grew up? She said, I wanted to be an astrophysicist. I was inspired by the NASA space program. And 20 minutes later, we asked her, what are you doing now? And she dipped her head, and she literally was a prostitute on the streets of Philadelphia. And she and others in the room said, we wanted, more challenge, classes to be connected to what we want to be in life, higher standards. Even some of them said, we would have done more homework if there had been a little more engagement, a little more expectation and belief. Their belief in themselves were actually in pretty stark contrast to the belief that a lot of people around them had.
I think some of that comes back to the curriculum and the standards being rigorous, the relevancy as well. And that's what we're finding through a lot of our schools and districts are offering project-based learning.
Right.
And it's really moving the needle for student engagement.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss improving student retention and high school graduation rates are Northern Kentucky Education Council Executive Director Polly Lusk-Page, Learn to Earn Dayton Executive Director and University of Dayton Professor Dr. Thomas Lasley, and founder and CEO of Civic Enterprises and Vice Chair of the Service Year Alliance at the Aspen Institute, John Bridgeland. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Polly, how is Kentucky doing in terms of the numbers? I mean, 10% increase across the board nationally.
We're doing well as a state. Our on-time graduation cohort right now is about 88.9%. For our Northern Kentucky region, we're at 93%. So we're doing very well. We've seen increases across the board at both the region and the state level.
What about Ohio, Tom?
Well, Ohio's really just beginning to look at the overall attainment rates that we want for our population. That's educational attainment rates. It appears as though the state's going to set a goal of 65% of our working age population, 25 to 64-year-olds, with some sort of marketable credential. And to achieve that goal, we are absolutely going to have to be aggressive about continuing to increase our high school graduation rates. There have been some positive trends, but I think everyone believes the ultimate goal is really around overall educational attainment, and high school graduation is a key step toward that.
I would add that Ohio has made slow and steady progress over the last decade. It is about 81 to 82% high school graduation rate, up from in the 70s, even the 60s in some areas of the state. But they have these extraordinary graduation gaps. Black students, if you're black in Ohio or a low income student, your chances of graduating from high school are 20 percentage points lower than white and higher income peers. In contrast, interestingly, in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, they have an 88% graduation rate, as Polly mentioned, but their low income graduation rate is about 84 to 85%. It's one of the lowest gaps in the country. So they're doing something. There's some secret sauce in Kentucky as it relates to low-income students that we're actually studying right now, places like Floyd County and other parts of the state that are really impoverished.
I think another opportunity that we've had across the state, we have a tool called Persistence to Graduation Tool, and that tool has helped educators and others to really look at their students and say, here's a red flag for a student, and we can put early interventions in place. And it's been pretty remarkable about the consistency of using that tool.
In fact, you can predict as early as third, fourth, fifth grade,
right,
a student's attendance, behavior, and course performance in reading and math, far more predictive than test scores,
right,
in terms of their likelihood of dropping out. In fact, if you can predict that so early, you can intervene against it. Today, the Department of Education released that 6.5 million students were absent from school last year, 13% of the population. They were chronically absent. Well, we can actually do something about that, and places in Kentucky and Ohio are doing it.
One of the things I'd like the listeners, especially those in the Cincinnati area, to be aware of is the systemic nature of some of these variables. Cincinnati is looking at trying to put in place a preschool promise that's going to allow preschool for three-year-olds and four-year-olds to be a real part of the educational infrastructure of the community. What we know from the data that we've collected in the Dayton area is that preschool readiness and kindergarten readiness is clearly connected to third-grade reading proficiency. Third-grade reading proficiency is clearly related to high school graduation rates. They're all connected. And so the people who are going, is this a good investment or not? For those of us in the Cincinnati area, I would argue, and I have no skin in the game for Cincinnati, I would argue if you really want those rates to keep moving up, you look systemically and say, where does it all begin? It begins with the readiness of your young people to learn when they enter school, and I would encourage everyone to support that initiative.
Tom, how much do states look to other states for ideas? If another state's doing well with it, do states say, well, you know what, maybe I should copy that idea, maybe you should think about trying that?
Well, when I first began our initiative to try to increase our attainment rates in Montgomery County, which is where Dayton is located and all of our school districts in Montgomery County, I actually went to about 20 other cities to look at what they were doing. I went to Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville had a very, very aggressive campaign called 55,000 Degrees. I went to Portland, all hands raised. I went to a number of cities to see what they were doing. And the thing that struck me was that people were not lowering their expectations for the young people. They were increasing the expectations because they realized that educational attainment and economic vitality are closely connected. And so that's where we really have to be sensitive as we're moving forward with a lot of our efforts around the public policy, is to make sure we're creating good public policy, not just convenient public policy.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Fred in Sharonville joins us now. Hi, Fred.
Good afternoon. I have a question. One of the panelists mentioned a national survey of students who had left high school. And I was curious to know what was the number one cause they gave for leaving high school, because I think that's important, because obviously it may also impact, be a factor in the performance of students in high school as well.
Fred, it's a great question. The report was called The Silent Epidemic, and in fact, your question was the leading question across the country. And what we found, it wasn't academic failure or challenge. It wasn't even real-life events. It was a lack of connection between what young people wanted to be in life and what the school was offering them, what they were learning in school, and the lack of relevance and relationship to that. And those students who had access, a lifeline, it could be through a science class, a coach, a counselor, someone in the school who made a deliberate connection between what that student wanted to be and what they were learning in school, could be through a service learning project, had much better results. But that was the leading reason. The second suite of reasons were real-life events. Young girls and boys who had a child didn't see the means to stay in school and raise that child. Those who had to get a job at 16 and 17 to support their families didn't feel like they could stay in school and hold down a job. Or even caretakers. They had a sick grandmother or parent in the home, and they were in charge of their health care. So it's extraordinary circumstances for young people at that age.
Jim called in, and he wanted to know how do you track dropouts? How do you accurately gauge the number of kids who've dropped out of school?
So actually, at the school, district, state, and national level, we have a common way of doing that now, and we didn't before. And that's just to look at the number of students who enter in freshman year, and then 4 years later, what's the on-time high school graduation rate? And the delta between that number and the non-graduates is the number we use for all this data we're providing. Schools also can look at dropout rates across an entire school in a given year, and they do that as well.
School districts can, in our area, are very able to identify the young people who have dropped out. And I think one of the real positives that you see is the intervention programs, mm-hmm. where we are going after those students very purposefully to try to bring them back into the system. And I might add, we're not just trying to get them back into the system to get that high school diploma. We're trying to get them into the system to get the diploma plus whatever else they need in order to secure a living wage job after they graduate. I think John mentioned, you know, the students seeing the relevance. Well, the key to the students seeing the relevance is to understand, look, we're educating you for a purpose. And the more we can do that with young people, I think the more we can really set expectations about their performance that are going to allow them to be successful when they become adults.
In one of our larger school districts, Boone County School District, they have what they call a FAST team. It's families and students working together, and there's a social worker involved, community partners, and they have seen their attendance rise dramatically. It's also a dropout prevention strategy. Grades are going up because they really surround these children and these families with the supports that they need. I could talk all day about all of our different examples in Northern Kentucky that districts have really implemented. Another thing that we've done intentionally is target middle-level youth because, you know, this that you just don't wake up one morning and say, I'm going to drop out.
That's true.
So we have, you know, we've put some stock into that and really thought about that many times through our Gallup poll data. We have 4 years of baseline data and looking at that data and saying, where could we really help these children the most? So several of our districts have put after school programs in place for middle level and thinking about what does that mean for those children, that middle level student.
You know, Polly's right. It's this slow process of disengagement. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to even teachers in kindergarten, nursery school, they can tell you, they can identify the kids and they say it's not often the academic. It's actually the social and emotional trauma or development of a child. And increasingly, the evidence is overwhelming that we've got to worry about grit, persistence, emotional trauma, and other factors beyond academics.
We had a caller who wanted to know, how do you deal with the problem of parents who aren't involved in the overall system? How do you get more parents involved in caring about their child's education and making sure they graduate?
We actually did a study and it showed that if parents were involved in the life of their children, they did far better across the board throughout the system. It was the single most important factor. And outside of school, in school, it's a teacher. Parents who are absent have to be awakened to the fact that their children will kind of fall flat on the American dream. Every single generation in American history, children have done better, had better prospects than their parents, except this one. And since the 1960s, we've seen the breakdown of the American family, and it's causing a lot of disruption for a lot of kids. And their efforts all across the country, including in this community, the Cincinnati Youth Collaborative, is a fabulous example of mentoring and tutoring programs that engage families, engage parents, kind of awaken them to the need to get in the lives of their children and in the school.
I might add that one of the things that's critical is really an advocating adult on the part of that young person. We've always suggested it does not need to be a parent, although that's obviously preferable. But there was a set of studies done maybe 20 years ago called the Resilient Children Studies. And basically they found that where you have an advocating adult really supporting that young person, even if it's not a parent, it makes a difference in the success of that young person in school.
I believe, Tom, talking earlier about the preschool promise, and thinking in Northern Kentucky we have pre-K works, and thinking about that earliest engagement so parents understand from the very beginning that they're their child's first teacher and how important it is. So that really envelops parent engagement as well, thinking from the very beginning.
Tom, Civic Enterprises, John, I mean, the Civic Enterprises report on graduation rates, there was a statement that I wanted to ask you about, a very interesting statement. You called it this uptrend. It's a great achievement. But the report also says it presents an early warning sign.
Yes, unfortunately.
So and I'm just wondering how so.
Yeah, after 3 years of being on track to meet this 90% goal that four U.S. presidents have set and the first three missed, this year for the first time we're slightly off pace. There are about 27 states across the United States that are on pace. That includes Indiana and Kentucky. There are 21 states that are off pace. Unfortunately, that includes my home state of Ohio. But the good news is, as you asked Tom, there are laboratories of innovation in schools and districts all across the United States, and we can learn from one another to help keep more states and districts on track to reach this goal and beyond.
How achievable do you think the 90% goal is, Tom?
Oh, I think the 90% goal is very achievable. One of the things we've done is we've over-relied on a 20th century invention to educate our young people. What I think you're going to begin to see more and more are adults and educators creating vehicles to educate our young people that give them the skills, the academic skills, the social skills they need without necessarily relying on that comprehensive high school as the delivery mechanism. And for our young people coming especially from some of our poorer areas, I think we're going to have to come up with alternative methods for delivering education because we now have the means to do that. And I'm optimistic about our future, especially as it relates to ensuring that more and more young people have the skills that they need to be successful.
And, Mark, it's interesting to answer your question about what would it take to get to 90%. It's 284,591 additional graduates in the United States. In Ohio, that's three football stadiums. We can do that. In Ohio, it's only 11,000 additional graduates. And so when people see it's sort of a targeted – and in Ohio, there are 135 schools, 55 of these high school dropout factories, where if we could reform those and improve those outcomes for the 57% of non-graduates in Ohio who are attending those schools, we can turn this thing around. And I think we can do it.
Polly, your thoughts on reaching that 90%?
Well, we've surpassed it. Yep. In our region, and our state is 1/10 percentage away, so right. I know we can do it.
But on a national level, is that an achievable goal?
I absolutely think it is.
Yeah.
And I do think as states and as regions, we learn from each other, and you take the best, and then you try to emulate that. Absolutely.
Polly, John, Tom, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Northern Kentucky Educational Council Executive Director Polly Lust-Page, Learn to Earn Dayton Executive Director, and University of Dayton Professor Dr. Thomas Lasley, and the founder and CEO of Civic Enterprises and Vice Chair of the Service Year Alliance at the Aspen Institute, John Bridgeland. Coming up, we'll discuss more women taking leadership positions within companies and organizations and hear about the upcoming Regional Women's Summit. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.